Those who practice meditation on any kind of symbol, those who are engaged in meditations which are connected with some form, even if it be a largely extended form, reach up to salvation through stages. This gradual ascent of the soul to final emancipation is called the process of Krama Mukti. In mystical circles, two ways of the attainment of salvation are recognized, the gradual one and the immediate one. Under certain circumstances, due to the intensity of the force of meditation, one may attain immediate liberation at one stroke, like a sudden awakening from sleep into the world of realities. This sort of immediate awakening is called Sadhya Mukti. Awakening or emancipation at once, and entering into the spaceless and timeless eternity by being shaken up from the perceptional consciousness of the temporal world. Such an immediate experience of final liberation is hard to obtain, and it is not given to all those who are accustomed to ordinary types of meditation. But what happens to those who are engaged in meditation throughout their lives on some form or the other, intently concentrating upon their Ishta Devata or even Saguna Brahman, the absolute with the conceptual form attached to it? Because of the form, because of the peculiar relationship of the mind concentrating with the form upon which it concentrates, because of the interference of space and time between the meditative mind and the object of meditation, irrespective of the quality of the object or the immensity of the object of meditation, because of this reason, there is a passage in space and time. This rise of the soul to final emancipation through a passage is called Krama Mukti, a gradual ascent. So here in this section of the Upanishad, we have a mention of the various stages through which the soul passes in its gradual ascent to the Absolute. The more detailed passages are to occur in the Chandogya Upanishad and another place in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, but here it is a very succinct and precise statement. When the soul leaves the body, having been absorbed in meditation throughout life, what happens to that soul? Here we are not speaking of the ordinary souls of people who are bound with their desires to the mortal world. Here the subject is the status of the soul after death, which has been spiritually inclined and absorbed in spiritual meditations throughout life. What happens to such souls? Such a soul, after it casts off the body, reaches the step that is immediately above the physical world. Here, a very symbolic language is used by the Upanishads. symbolic in the sense the names or the epithets of the various stages represent not merely the grammatical meaning or the lexicographical meaning of the names given, but the deity is superintending over these stages. A particular deity, a particular divine force takes possession of this soul, and through these essence, the soul confronts various divinities who become its friends on account of the meditation that it has practiced in life. We are told that the immediate ascent is to the deity of the flame of fire, which is subtler than the physical plane. The human mind cannot conceive how many degrees of reality there are. We cannot understand as to what these stages actually mean. No one has seen these stages, and the language used also is such that the intention of the Upanishad cannot be easily intelligible. Commentators have always been a failure in the context of passages of this kind. We have such a description in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also. The two paths are described, the northern path and the southern path, as they are called. Now the ascent to the Absolute through these graduated stages is through the northern path, the Archiradi Marga, or the Uttarayana Marga, as it is usually called. The deity of fire, which is identified with flame, takes possession of the soul. The physical realm is transcended, and it becomes lustrous in its contour. The physical body having been cast off, the soul assumes a new body of an ethereal character. A subtle body is there, but not the physical body. The sukshma sharira, or the body that is characterized by mere mind, prana and senses, remains even after the body is cast off. But as there is a gradual ascent from the lower to the higher, there is also a gradual effectuation of the transparency of this body. The soul's body becomes more and more pellucid, more and more transparent, more and more capable of reflecting reality in itself, while it is most incapable of doing that in the physical plane. The physical life is opaque to the influence of reality. The existence of reality is completely outside the purview of the existence of the individual in the physical world. For instance, we are apparently not influenced by the existence of other people outside. We have an intensity of feeling of personality, so that we are tied down to the reality of the body alone. But this is not the case as there is a gradual ascent. There is a feeling of reality more and more outside oneself as there is ascent. So from the physical realm, there is the ascent to the realm of fire. Archi is the word used in the Upanishad. Archi means flame. Luminous fire. Having been purified by contact with the deity of fire, or Agni, it rises still further and goes to the deity of the day. Every day is presided over by a particular force, and that is why we have difference of different days. Each day is different from the other day. on account of a particular influence exerted upon it by certain natural forces. These forces are divine in their nature. They are superphysical. So from the deity of flame, the soul goes to the deity of the day. From the deity of the day, it rises to the deity which presides over the bright half of the lunar fortnight. A lunar month consists of two halves, the bright and the dark. The bright half is superintended by a particular deity, and that deity takes possession of the soul. This is the stage to which it reaches after the day is transcended. Then the soul goes up further to the deity which presides over the 6 months during which the sun moves to the north. This is what is called Uttarayana in the traditional language. In Indian tradition, the northern course of the sun has always been regarded as very sacred for reasons very peculiar, highly mystical. And even such great masters like Bhishma of the great Mahabharata is supposed to have waited for the coming of the sun to the north for the sake of discarding the body. The deity that presides over the half of the year during which the sun moves to the north, that takes possession of the soul further on. Then the soul goes up to the realm of the deity which presides over the entire year. There are 60 years in a particular cycle, according to calculations astronomically made. Each year has a particular name, just as there is a name for a particular day, Sunday, Monday, etc. The deity that presides over the year is responsible for the purification of the soul further on, after it goes from the lower levels. Then the soul is supposed to go up to the realm of wind or vayu. The atmosphere itself takes possession of it. It becomes a citizen of a larger area, not merely of a limited locality. Then it goes up to the sun. The sun is regarded as a very important halting place of the soul in its passage to the Supreme Being during the northern movement or the Archiradi Marga. Then there is a movement further to a realm which is designated as moon in the language of the Upanishads. Here commentators differ in their opinion. What is this moon? Evidently it cannot be the moon that we see with our eyes, because that cannot be supposed to be superior to the sun or transcending the sun. So some teachers think that it is a more blissful intermediary condition, very cool like that of the moon, and so they designate as the moon, but not necessarily the physical moon that we see with our eyes. That is the stage which is reached by the soul after it goes beyond the sun. The stages beyond the sun are very hard to describe. They are something most unthinkable. They have nothing to do with this world practically. And they are not characterized by any kind of experience usually available in this world. Up to the region of the sun, we may be said to be in the temporal realm. Beyond that, it is non-temporal and something unusual. Then the Upanishad says there is a flash, the realm of lightning, not this physical lightning evidently. Maybe the light of the Supreme Being Himself, the light of Brahman, flashes. Just as there are lightning flashes in the sky during the monsoons, which indicate the movement of electricity in the atmosphere. Likewise, we are given an indication of our approach to Brahman, as if we are on the borderland of the Absolute. the flashes of light of a supernatural nature, the soul is supposed to behold. Beyond that, what happens to the soul is a great mystery, says the Upanishad itself. Evidently, the gravitational pull exerted by its own existence is inadequate to the purpose. The ocean pushes even the river back to certain miles when the force of the waves is too much, too intense. The gravitational pull of the rocket of the soul, which moves of its own accord with its own energy, is inadequate to the purpose. So at this level of lightning, some supernal help comes to its aid. A superhuman being comes. Purusho amanavaha, says the Upanishad. Someone who cannot be called human comes there and takes the soul by its hand and directs it onwards. It is guided by another force altogether, not the force of its own personality or its understanding. There are people who think that the superior being is the guru who comes there. The guru who has initiated you, who has taught you, who has shown you the path, and who has taken care of you spiritually, is not dead even after the physical body is cast off. His soul visualizes the course of the soul of the disciple, and the guru comes there in his subtle form and takes that disciple's soul by the hand, as it were, and directs it onwards. There are others who think it is God himself coming in one form. Well, it makes no difference to us whether it is God or guru, because even guru is a form of God only as far as the spiritual life is concerned. Then it goes up further to the realms of the cosmic waters, whose deity is designated as the Varuna, not the ordinary waters. Cosmic waters. The soul becomes cosmic, universal in its nature. It sheds its personality, individuality. And then it goes to the supreme state of Virat, where it becomes practically absorbed into universality. Then it reaches the absolute. So this is the gradual ascent of the soul, stage by stage, through what is called Krama Mukti. All this is not described here in this passage. That will be told in other sections of the Upanishad, more so in the Chandogya Upanishad, which we may have the occasion to study if God wills. Here, the passage is short. It mentions only a few of the stages and not all those that I mentioned to you just now. When the soul leaves this world, it reaches the wind, it says, suddenly. And the Lord of the wind, the God, wind God, releases the soul from the clutches of the atmosphere. The force of this earth is relaxed and it does not pull you anymore downward as it used to do earlier. As if there is a hole in the atmosphere through which one can pass, the soul visualizes a passage. Highly symbolic language is this again. As large as the hole made by the diameter of a wheel of a chariot, so much large is the hole that the soul visualizes in the atmosphere. And it passes through that hole, through the realm of the wind. And it goes to the region of the sun, who also allows a passage which is as wide in diameter as that of a kettle drum. The sun is very large. Many people cannot reach him. He will obstruct the ascent of the soul further. But he allows the movement of the soul onwards if it had been practiced in meditation, especially on the Vaishvanara, as it has been indicated in the earlier section we studied yesterday. Then it goes up to the realm of the moon, to which we made reference just now, where a passage which is as wide in diameter as that of a big drum, is available to the soul and goes up. Urdhvamag akramate salokam agachatit ashokam ahimam tasmin vasati shashvati sama. A sorrowless world is reached where the physical laws do not operate. Neither the ordinary psychological laws which bring about sorrow to the mind does do operate there, nor does any other law pertain into this world. Such is the blessedness which the departed soul obtains by practice of meditation on the Vaishvanara, which is the context of the subject presently on hand. This particular section on meditation whose object is Vaishvanara is here concluded. There are other kinds of symbols through which one can practice meditation. Many of the symbolic suggestions given in the Upanishad look fantastic to people who are not used to appreciate the relationship between the physical world and the higher worlds. Why do we use symbols for description? Because transcendental truths are not visible objects, and so they cannot be explained through language, which is useful only to describe objects of sense. If I ask you to describe what is fourth dimension, what language can you use? No scientist will be able to explain in available language what is fourth dimension. He will only say the fourth dimension. It is impossible to describe it because it is not of the nature of anything that we can think of in this world. There is no such thing as four dimension, because everything in this world is three dimensional only. So whatever be the stretch of your imagination, that thing called fourth dimension will be outside the ken of your knowledge. How will you meditate upon it if I ask you to contemplate that realm? Inasmuch as language is important here, symbols are used. It is something like this, something like that. This is what is called symbol. So, is the utility of symbols in meditation.